Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
Well, tonight what we're going to be doing is looking at wisdom from the book of Daniel. And so we're going to look at God's wisdom and how we can be wise people and what that means. And so we're doing a bit of a word study tonight on two Hebrew words that come up throughout Daniel. But before we get on to that, who's the wisest person that you know?
My father's
pretty wise. Yeah. I was thinking about this before, and I was thinking my father too. I think my dad's pretty wise.
Like I used to work for, he was pretty wise.
Yeah? What makes them wise? What makes a person wise, or those people wise? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to look at Daniel now. There are two key Hebrew words for wisdom in Daniel. One's the word chokmah, and the other word is maskelim. And we're going to look at those two words, where they come up in throughout Daniel, and then get an idea of what they mean and what that might mean for us, or how we should think about that. So we're going to look firstly at the word chokmah and see where it comes up in Daniel and what it might tell us a bit about God's wisdom, because it means wisdom. Daniel chapter 1. Now, who can tell me a bit about Daniel? Can any of you tell me a bit about Daniel and what Daniel's about?
Was an exile.
Yes.
And he sort of stood up for God when he was in exile in Babylon.
Yes. Very good.
Had a high position.
Yes. He did.
His opinion was respected by his captors, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Interpreting dreams.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was selected out of, as we'll see, out of the all the captives by the king. Come into the king's court and be one of the wisest, yep. And, was well respected, but stood up for what he believed.
Mm.
It's got him in a bit of trouble sometimes. So let's read, we're just going to read chapter 1. There'll be a little bit of reading through Daniel, but not a lot. A lot of it will centre on chapter 1 and a bit of chapter 2. But we're going to read chapter 1, verses 1 to 20. Now, in the opening chapter there, what can we learn about Daniel's wisdom? I need to point out three verses because it's not clear in the NIV translation where wisdom comes up. So in verse 4, if you find verse 4, we read, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing chokmah for every kind of learning, well informed, quick to understand, qualified to serve in the king's palace. There's this idea there in verse 4 of showing aptitude, and that's the word chokmah, is this aptitude, it's a capacity to learn. Now, verse 17, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and chokmah of all kinds of literature and learning, and understanding, again, a capacity to learn. And then in verse 20, in every matter of wisdom and understanding in every matter of chokmah, there it's translated with an understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better. So that's where those three words are. Now in that, throughout that chapter, there's this sort of 4 to 21 that should be. How is that demonstrated? What do we learn about Daniel's wisdom? What else do we learn about it compared with the wisdom of the Babylonians? So it's much greater and superior. Yep. And so let's move on to chapter 2. There are two big points that came out of that first chapter that is given this type of wisdom comes from God, and it's far better than the wisdom of the Babylonians. And it's shown in him interpreting dreams and being able to do things that no one else can. You go, wow, this is kind of, what is this kind of wisdom? So Daniel chapter 2, we're only going to look at a few verses here rather than read the whole thing. Verses 10 and 11, that's in the context of Nebuchadnezzar asking his magicians and the normal interpreters that he would go to interpret a dream, but he's not willing to tell them what it is. And they have to tell him the dream and then tell him the interpretation of it.
No,
and
they're still on the dream.
And they're going, yeah, come on. I don't think so. Yeah, he wants to know for sure what his dream means. But that's because I had these books, dream books and stuff, right? So if you had a dream and it was of a tree and had something else in it, yeah. something else, they would look up their book and go, well, a tree, that could mean this, this, or this. And if you combine that with this other imagery of a river, then that must mean this and this. And then they put it together. That's how they would interpret it. Whereas he's saying, no, if you can tell me the dream, you can tell me what the real meaning is, not just what you get out of the book. Then we skip over to, well, because they said that to the king, they said, no one can reveal this to you. It's impossible, except the gods, and they do not live among men. And the king gets angry and furious in verse 12 and issues a death, a penalty to them, in verse 13. Daniel finds out in verse 14 and says to, and then goes to the king in verse 16, give me time so that I might be able to interpret your dream for you. And then in verse 17 and 18, he goes to his friend's house and then he prays. And he praises God. And so can we read verses 20 to 23? He made known to us the dream of the king. Back in verse 19, during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. And he praises God. So, and in that verses 20 to 23, we have the word Chokhmah comes up a couple of times. He gives Chokhmah to the wise in verse 21. And then in verse 23, you have given me Chokhmah and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. Let's look at verses 27 to 30. He goes back to the king. What does Daniel say to the king in verses 27 to 30? Again, so what do we learn about this kind of wisdom that's brought home here?
Daniel says, look, I'm not wise. You know, I'm just telling you what God's told me.
What God said, yes. It's a revelation, indeed. So this kind of wisdom that we're seeing here is this very powerful wisdom that's able to interpret dreams. It's a wisdom that God has revealed things to people about other people. This is a kind of, for us, I think this is kind of a weird kind of wisdom. I don't have any personal experience of this kind of thing happening, but this is from God, this kind of wisdom. Daniel 5 verses 11 and 14. Now that doesn't really add much to what we've already said, except to say that there's something about him that has been recognised to be something of the gods. The spirit of the gods is in this guy, Daniel. Now, is that the kind of wisdom that we expect today? Do we expect that kind of thing from God today? Is that something that's normative, or should that be happening today, or
not much?
Have you ever heard people talk about this kind of thing happening?
If there's a godly person somewhere, I don't tend to link that with wisdom.
Yeah, sure.
Thinking I might be out there sort of doing God's will and doing the right thing, but don't tend to link it with the word wisdom.
Sure. We're going to look at the next word that will be very insightful, I think, masculine. That'll touch this on what you're saying, huh? But we don't really see this kind of Chokhmah today, though some people would say that they do see it. The reason that that I've looked at this word particularly with masculine is A, that it's very important in the book of Daniel, but also that today a lot of people get caught up on the idea of experience, that we need to have this kind of revelation in order to know God. And I don't know that's necessarily true. It happened with Daniel, and it's descriptive of what happened to Daniel in his time and how God used him. But it would be dangerous for us to expect that has to be the normative experience, because as we'll see when we look at this next word, we see what it is to be someone that is wise and a person that is godly and experiences a different kind of wisdom. And so let's move on to maskilim, for God's people. This is a word, it's not just referring to wisdom, but about people. And it's I've written there, active causative sense. So it's something that is, it's not just a passive thing, it's something that people do, and it's something that is caused. And it's a way of growing and getting more knowledge and getting more understanding. Not necessarily from some amazing revelation. The maskilim are God's people, those who are wise in God's eyes. So those, this is sort of from God's point of view, who is wise. We're going to go to the last chapter of Daniel. Daniel chapter 11, verse 33. This comes at the end of this big prophecy of a war of kings of the north and the south, and terrible things happening in this place where Daniel is. Now, there's a lot of speculation as to who the different kings are, to who these different nations are. And it comes down to the Persians and the Greeks. They think that verse 31, where there's this abomination that caused desolation, could be referring to a man named Antiochus Epiphanes IV. Is that name, have you ever come across that name? No, he was a guy that went into Israel and destroyed the temple and offered up a sacrifice to Zeus, one of the pagan gods, by slaughtering a pig on the temple, which to Jews is an abomination. Imagine doing that. That's just terrible. So that's why they think that's where that is. But during this time, those who are masculine, those who are wise, masculine, will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. When they fall, they will receive a little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Some of the masculine will stumble, so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end. For it will still come at the appointed time. Now, keep that in mind as we look in verse 33. What will the masculine do? So this idea that the wise, they'll stumble, it is pretty bad. And wise, they might be refined, purified, and made spotless. What does it mean to stumble, I guess?
Stumble means you're kind of making progress, but then you have you slip up. You don't still continue on the progressive path.
It's actually the same word as fall in verse 33. It's unhelpful the way the NIV's written that. Just in that, if I read it from a more literal translation, it says, the wise among the people shall make many understand or instruct others, though for some days they shall stumble by sword and flame, by captivity and plunder. When they stumble, they shall receive a little help, and many shall join themselves to them with flattery. And some of the wise shall stumble, so that they may be refined, purified, and made white until the time of the end. So it's the same word they're used for when they falling by the sword as for when they stumble and are refined. Now, it may be that they're killed, or it may be that they're persecuted, held back and suppressed. But the reason for it is that they might be refined and purified and made spotless when that happens.
Is this what God has told Daniel? Is this his Daniel?
Yes. This is what God is telling Daniel.
Daniel's looking.
I think this is just him right in the first year of Darius. This is some time after Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar's gone, and his son Belteshazzar came up to be king, and it's after he's gone, and Darius has now come up. And it's just before, do you know about the exile? Israel were exiled out of Israel, went off to Babylon, that's where Daniel is. And it's just before they return, and he has this vision from God, and this is what he's recounting.
Well, that's way before those Middle Ages when they
lived and
lots of Jews.
It was written between 586 and 516 BC or something like that. Prophecy does look forward, doesn't it? It looks forward to maybe to a specific event, but also to other things. It's generally considered, because of the passage before that and the way that Daniel 11 writes, it looks like it's actually talking about the battle between, the actual name is the Seleucids, and the northern Seleucids were the Greeks, and a guy named Antiochus Epiphanes IV, what a name, he's from Greece, and he took over Israel and went into Jerusalem and ransacked the whole city and desecrated the temple and then slaughtered a pig on the temple altar, which is just completely an abomination, which is why in verse 31 his armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice, and they'll set up the abomination that causes desolation. Because of the, when you look at the history books and see what actually happened in history and then you read this, it's so parallels that that's what they think it's specifically referring to, and many Jews were killed at that time. But what will the outcome of all this be? We're going to look at some end time kind of stuff, or some other prophecies, some interesting kind of prophecies, in chapter 12, verses 1 to verse 10. The word masculine comes up as the word the wise in verse 10 there. So many will be purified, made spotless, etc. None of the wicked will answer, but those who are masculine will understand. Those who are the masculine, you could say. And back in verse 3, those who are the masculine will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness. So what's the outcome of the wise, the masculine? It's a good thing to shine like stars, and it's a good thing to not be amongst the wicked. We're going to learn a bit more about what it means to be one of about those who are wise from the next. There's just four verses there that I've put down to look up. We've already seen one tonight. Daniel 1, they use the same word in the same verse. Daniel 1, verse 17. There is both words in there.
Oh, they're both
there. Chokhmah is the first word, the knowledge, God-given knowledge. And the word learning, the understanding there, is skill in literature and wisdom. So it's a skill, not just a mental understanding. It's a skill enabled to work things out. So it's God-given knowledge, and then these masculine have a skill.
So the aptitude was the God-given knowledge, was it?
Back in verse 4.
Yeah.
Yes, that's God-given. And then let's go to Daniel 9. Verse 13 is the first one. This is part of a prayer that, as I said before, because we're at the end of the 70 years. Yeah, Daniel here is praying to God. It's a prayer of repentance and asking God for not just forgiveness, but acknowledging what they've done. So yeah, verse 13. We're looking at a particular word, and it's the word masculine in Hebrew, which obviously isn't written there in the English, but it's a word referring to the wise people, or the wise ones who are God's people. And the word there is giving attention to your truth, or gaining insight. These wise ones, or apparent wise ones, the word masculine is almost in a negative sense. Here are people that are meant to be wise that haven't given attention to God's truth. They haven't used any kind of knowledge that has come from God, which is a negative thing, hence why Daniel's acknowledging that before God. Let's move on. 9 verse 22 to 25. Don't we're too worried about all the numbers. Yeah, this is very prophetic and one of the most highly apocalyptic pieces of literature in the Old Testament. A very interesting passage. Lots of debate about what the numbers mean. But let's look at verse 22 anyway. He made me understand, speaking with me and saying, O Daniel, I have now come out to give you insight and understanding. The word insight there is the word masculine again. Like we saw in chapter 1, there's chokhmah and there's masculine. Chokhmah being a wisdom from God, superior revelation type of wisdom from God. Whereas this is a skill, an ability. The masculine are wise people with a skill and ability, an insight that is still given by God, but useful. So, what three things can we learn about those who are wise from these verses? Now, is there anything that we can learn from these verses? Chokhmah is a word for wisdom that comes from God, specifically from God for a specific purpose, and it's a greater and superior wisdom to anything in the world. What did it mean then, just from these sort of verses, what did it mean for someone to be wise or to be one of the masculine from what we've looked at and discussed? So someone who's got insights into God's truth.
Isn't it almost somebody who is, you know, identified by God as somebody having that trait? It wasn't available to everyone. Daniel had it.
Yeah, that's certainly the case with the chokhmah, definitely. And God knows who the masculine are, who the wise ones are. And in a sense, yes, you're right, it is given by God, but it's not special like the chokhmah was for a specific purpose. It's wisdom that people can have. It's not just so in verse chapter 11 and 12, it wasn't just Daniel. The masculine, it was anybody. It was just the wise ones were able to instruct others. It was the wise who ended up shining like stars in the face of persecution. The wise were those who suffered under some sort of persecution but were refined and spot made purified and made spotless. There's another word for wisdom called vina, and they're very closely related.
I go to the book of Solomon. Proverbs 3. And Proverbs 3 talks about following God's commands and knowing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is saying something similar in 22 for sure. One way or another seems the essence. I struggle with this, following the truth. 9:22, I think the wise, when they stumble through that use of that word, it was the stumbling by which they begin to know the commands, the word of God, become more refined, and then are able to, well, that insight and understanding is understanding the truth of the commands of God.
Which brings me to that question, when I said, what did it mean for someone to be one of the masculine, and how were they meant to live, even just from that verse? How, if someone is one of the masculine, what would be an identifying feature of that? One of the wise. Is that fitting in now? Someone masculine is a wise person that seeking after God and his truth and his word and putting it into practice. They have a skill in, from verse 1, chapter 1:17, of skill in learning it, even though it's still given by God, this wisdom to know him and to follow him. And how are they supposed to live? Well, they're supposed to live according to, as Gordon has said, God's commands, and to live obediently to his truth. Now, the masculine, as we saw there at the end in chapter 11, are people that will properly understand what lies ahead and live properly according to their wisdom that is from God, but that seeks him. Now, Julia's kind of already raised this idea. Is it appropriate to apply the term masculine to us today? And why or why not? Could we, as individuals, be part of the wise, the masculine? Why not?
But to actually live like that, you would really have to go different ways. Like, there's lots of, you would really have to give up lots of the things, like social, employment life, or too much. Really try to live like your conscience only tells you.
What do you think?
What Jesus, the death on the cross, and what Jesus did, whoever believes in that then becomes part of that, of all these things. Because what he did is he grafted the world, potentially the world, into the promises and these things that before were only available to few people.
Let's look at a couple of passages very quickly. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. The very first reference in Daniel is chapter 1 verse 17. But we're going to jump off the word masculine now to the idea of wisdom and what wisdom is, and see what it might mean for us to be wise. Before we get into 1 Corinthians, what does it mean for us to be wise? What would it mean for us to be wise? We're going to look at verses 18 and onwards and look at how God's wisdom is displayed versus the wisdom of people. Now, we could keep reading, but I think that's probably a good place to finish. What do we learn about God's wisdom? Yep. Has not God made the foolish the wisdom of the world? The things that we think are wise and good things, God says, foolish. Philosophers, you know, the philosophers of this age. And what God has done. Sorry, science, yeah. But yet God sends his son, Jesus, to die on a cross, to us. I think, what a foolish thing to do, but that's God's wisdom, which is wiser than ours. The way that people generally try and understand things and work things out or do things, we would never consider killing our own child for the sake of other people. Like, to us, that would be a foolish thing to do. But to God, his foolishness is wiser than the extent of our ability and our wisdom. For the foolishness of God, what is the foolishness of God? What's he talking about there?
I can't see God as
It's not saying that he is foolish, that's right. It's the foolishness of God from our point of view. From our point of view, it's foolish of God to sacrifice his son for people. But that's really wiser. His act is actually wiser than anything we could. And the weakness of God is stronger than our strength. But it's interesting here, and I guess this is where, as we keep reading through, this is a packed passage. Maybe I started too early, but even of us, like Julia was mentioning earlier, we could never be part of the masculine, you know, we could never be that good. But he's saying here that we don't have to be that good. That he chose the foolish things of this world, didn't chose the noble things, didn't do that. He chose the lowly things, the despised things, the things that are not, nullify things that are. And it's because of him you're in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. It's in Jesus is our wisdom from God. And he is our righteousness, our holiness, and our redemption. So whilst we can't boast in anything of ourselves, what we can boast in is Jesus, if we're in him. And he is our wisdom. And so in a sense, we can be a part of the wise because of who Jesus is, and when we're identified in him. Does that make sense?